The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
Episode number
187.
That is right. And this is our first episode of the new year.
So happy new year.
Can I say thank you to everybody who sent us messages? And usually it's the reviews and stuff.
Yeah.
But this one was, guys, don't have a new episode. I feel kind of lonely.
Yeah, we're so sorry. We needed a break. I needed a break.
That's sure.
Yes.
But without further ado, we are going to pursue and push through 187 today, 200 in the next couple months.
Yeah.
And the rest is history.
It's true. Yeah. I did get a message also because someone had watched our Happy New Year video.
Yeah.
And they wanted to know what your word was.
I still don't have one yet.
Oh, okay.
Well, like, ask me in a couple weeks. I'll come up with one.
I think I picked one.
What?
Purpose.
For me or for you?
For me.
Oh, I think that for me. Like,
yeah, you need some purpose,
no purpose
in your life.
I'm purposelessless or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll come up with a word. I promise.
All right.
By the end of this year, I will have a word.
Okay.
Whatever that is.
Well, somebody who has huge purpose is today's guest. Well,
quite an incredible story, mm-hmm. an amazing woman, and I can't wait to get down to the nitty gritty.
Exactly. She's done all sorts of things, and it just grew organically.
Hmm. She's bringing some hope, and we'll explain that a little later. Sarah Keppen, how are you?
I am doing great. How are you guys?
We're good, thank you.
Yeah, so far so good.
Yeah.
We like to ask this skill testing question because we never know where it's going to go. Sarah, who are you and where did you come from?
My name is Sarah Keppen. I live in Atlanta, Georgia, and I am somebody that's a starch advocate for protecting infants.
Someone just doesn't wake up one day and think, hey, this is what I want to do. So we want to dive into your story just a little bit. Were you born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia?
I was not. I'm actually from Colorado. Woohoo, go Colorado. We love Colorado. I moved here because my husband decided to be a chiropractor.
Okay.
And I really felt like I should be a doctor's wife. It just went right in there.
Yes.
And so we moved here. Fell in love with the state. Really enjoyed Georgia. And we have five kids, 19 through 15. And really what we're doing here is, you know, touching on subjects and come across some things that we found to be issues. And that's really what started my nonprofit here in Georgia.
All right. So pun intended, was the adjustment quite easy?
No. The South is much different than being over there in Colorado. Yes, yes. Okay, so you understand, Colorado is beautiful. It has the mountains. My husband's actually a native, comes from generations there. I miss really good Mexican food. I love Colorado in that way. Just the people there are a lot different. There seems to be a lot of different cultures and backgrounds. But the South has its own beauties. The South is very beautiful in itself. It has lots of trees, as everybody knows,
Yeah. And
it's a lot more family. I mean, there's a lot larger families, I would say, out here. It has its own perks to it. It's in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you got into, and I mean, we'll talk more about it, but you said an advocate growing up, as a child growing up, was advocacy, was that on your radar? Or what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a mom.
Okay.
My mother and I were super close. There's 12 children in my family.
12?
And I'm the fourth.
So yes, you just...
my mother was told she could not have children.
Oh, wow.
And so her and my dad really cried out to the Lord, and the Lord healed her. And she went on to have 12. The joke is, at the 12th child, my dad went and had a talk with God and basically said, we're good. So, yes. So I just loved everything about being a mom. I really wanted to get married. Some of my siblings are really into college and bigger aspirations. That wasn't me. I just loved everything around that. Just, you know, wanting to be a loving wife and love my babies. And God gave me that. I got these amazing children. I was super satisfied in that. If that's all I ever did, I'd be super excited. And then literally my husband and I got into marriage ministry, which led us into being advocates for families involved with the state, trying to get their kids back. So we were the family aspect, helping them, you know, kind of a safe place for them. What does a family dinner look like? What does this look like? And then it led to issues finding out with children throughout the country. 75% of our most at risk are ages 3 and under. And then the Lord really set me up and dropped a child off on my doorstep. I didn't know. I didn't really, like, he told me to pray, told me I had a son, pray for him to come home and pray for his mother. And 2 weeks later, he was at my house, and my husband came home from work, and I said, hey, this is Elijah. And that was the beginning of finding out the issue concerning abandonment and realizing how many children out there just kind of fall through the cracks in the system and how it's set up.
So I want to rewind for 1 second then. Yes. You said that, I mean, you were doing ministry with your husband and you had this faith. Was faith always a thing that you had growing up?
Faith is always a thing that I had growing up. Yes. That was, my parents raised us non-denominational. That was something that was very prevalent in the home, but it was, they raised us more on a relationship with Jesus. It's not about a religion. That was something that I was very grateful for, because I didn't see God as this big, scary person that I was going to get in trouble. I saw him in relationship. And so that's something that, that's always been a part of my life. That's something that will always be a part of my life, because just to know that I'm not alone no matter what I'm facing, and that he his heart for these kids is so big. That's kind of something that I would say is definitely a remnant of everything that I do.
All right, then let's fast forward then to you get a knock on your door. Did you know that, I mean, obviously this was a surprise. Did you know who it was? Why did they choose your door?
2 weeks before he came, the Lord told me that I had a son and pray for him to come home and pray for his mother.
Right.
My sweet husband was like, sweetie, we're not with an adoption agency. We're not with the state. Are you sure? Like, he was like, I'm worried about your heart. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but God said. And so we would pray together on the porch. And so through it, 2 weeks later, from that point of after praying together, I was at church one Sunday, and an older woman walked up to me. And she said, you don't know me, but my daughter was going to ask you to adopt my grandson 3 years ago. Huh. And at that time, she changed her mind, and she's been watching you, and she cannot care for him. And she said, she wants to know if you'll still take him. She had no idea what God had prepared in me. And I said, have her give me a call. So she gave me a call. I asked her what was going on, you know, how, where she at? And she was just in this place where she just really loved her son. She just couldn't care for him the way she knew he needed. I mean, down to even feeding him. Mm. You know, people don't realize how hard it is not be able to give your child a meal. Mm. So I said, okay, well, why don't you come on by? And she said, you don't understand. I want you to take him. And so she showed up the next day as a car seat and a little suitcase, and he jumped out of the car, saw the kids playing, ran up and started playing with them, just so excited to be playing with other kids. And I turned and looked at her, and I could see this, like, she loved him so much, but she just knew he needed to be safe. And then I said, are you okay? And she said, he's not eating in a couple days. He might be hungry. And she left. And it was hard for me as a mom, because from a mother to another mother, I could tell her love for him. When you get in a desperate situation as a mom or as a parent, and you have to make hard decisions like that, it's not because you're cold-hearted. It's actually because you're giving away a piece of your heart and giving somebody else the privilege to raise that child. And we raised Elijah that she's mommy number one because she had him, and I'm mommy number two because I'm raising him, but he can love us both, you know, differently. We're two different people in his life, and people are always surprised when I share about the love that she had for him too, you know, because you don't just wake up and say, today I'm going to leave my child. Mm-hmm. Today I'm going to abandon my child. There's a series of circumstances that lead to that, and when moms are brave enough to put their child before them, they're the heroes. They really are. And so I really would like to change the way people see that view. Why would any mother abandon their baby? It's because she's trying to protect her child from a situation maybe she can't get out of.
Did you have that compassion and understanding like you do now when Elijah was dropped off? Because that to me seems, over time, you've come to realize this a lot more, or more so than you originally did.
I think I had that compassion. It was probably that compassion that helped me to survive. When we got Elijah, he'd been through a lot. We immediately got him in play therapy because every emotion was anger. And if you get a child before age six, you can reverse a lot of things. After age six, it's more kind of permanent. But God, of course. So that's where you really need to intervene in those young ages. And unfortunately, in this country, we're not intervening at those young ages. So we're kind of waiting till kind of things are more permanent and dealing with that. And so I was aware of how to help him. So I contacted a play therapist and, you know, was able to get him the support he needed. But also I tried to contact the state for support for his mother and for me. And the state would not help me because she put him in a safe place. And there's nothing illegal about placing a child in a safe place. That became something where I thought, how do I navigate this with five children now? I have four of my own. We adopted Elijah. And how do I navigate this? I started studying the laws with abandonment, with adoption, with all of these types of surrounding issues. And that is when I basically, to advocate to be there for him, became one in five in the state of Colorado to take sole custody of a non-blood relative.
Is the mom part of his life now?
No, she's not been a part of his life for a while. But his grandmother, his bio grandmother, is, because I wanted to stay in contact with him. Mm. And unfortunately, she passed away this last year. I was really worried about that when it happened because, you know, I wanted my son to have the opportunity maybe at some point to connect with her. And I had to realize that that was my expectation, not his. And I sat down with him and said, how are you doing? And you know, he's so funny. He's like, you know, I know that she loved me. And he was like, but honestly, Mom, it's okay. He's like, I'm totally secure in, you know, your love and knowing that she did what she thought was best at the time. And coming from a 15-year-old, it's like he had settled things in his heart years ago. Like, he loved her. He was always sad that she had to fight so much of her own stuff, to, you know, like that. As a child, you don't want to see your parents hurt. And when you're a child that's been through trauma like he has, you often become the parent or you just want them to just be okay. So in his mind, he's reconciled. She's not hurting anymore. He's at peace with that. I think I cried more than he did.
But as a mom, you felt the pain, right?
Yes. My heart just broke for my son, for her. But and again, that was when the Lord had to deal with my heart and say, you had expectations on him, but you know, for future, that was not, you know, I had to wrestle that out and work through that, because you don't ever, that's not one mother to another mother never wants to be that person to, you know, this is a community. Sometimes they say it takes a community to raise children. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted him to feel complete one day, and he does. He does feel complete. I was wanting to see more of a wholeness there. I'm just going to have to let the Lord be Lord.
Mm-hmm. You know. You said that there are steps to adoption. I mean, us being in Canada, our laws are a lot different than the states. Are there different adoption laws then for each state?
Yes. So the adoption laws vary in every single state. And how that works. For instance, an example of that, in the state of Colorado, you can only adopt two ways, through an adoption agency or through the state. In the state of Georgia, you adopt three ways. You can do it through the state, through adoption agency, or through a lawyer. Hmm. The main thing you need to do in adoption is have a home study, pretty much in every single state. So a home study is something that you hire somebody. It's usually between $1,200 and $1,500. And they do like a background check, you know, fingerprints. They'll interview the family. It's just a complete in-depth look into your life to make sure, you know, there's not been any type of criminal record or something that would compromise you being able to parent.
Sure.
And that's really what a judge wants to see. So as long as you have a home study, pretty much you can adopt through most of these places. One thing you want to keep in mind is you want to keep your home study transferable. That's where you're not locked into one adoption agency. but you're able to, depending on how ever a child comes to you, you're able to use that home study for that case. And that's something a lot of parents don't know to ask, is the home study transferable? So basically, you own that home study.
It sounds like you had the opportunity to learn a lot about the laws in the area that you were in to keep children safe, essentially.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of the laws we have in place throughout the country are not actually keeping children safe. And there's a lot of work to be done. And some of those laws, and like in the United States, there's a law called the Safe Family Act that was done by the Clintons. And it actually does not protect children, even though it sounds like it would. It actually encourages some trafficking within the system. And that's when children are being trafficked within foster care. That is happening throughout the country. I mean, in many states, because they don't understand how DFACs work, how adoption agencies work, how this whole system, and nobody's talking to each other. So that's where the Hope Boxes really come in. There's no money exchange with our nonprofit. A mom chooses to do an adoption. We're privately funded by people and foundations that believe in what we're doing. And so we're kind of going in into the crisis, and we just take that crisis out depending on what that mother needs. If she needs to do an adoption, we'll work with lawyers, adoption agencies, with families, and get her connected with a home study approved family. If we're working with the state have called me at times because they have an infant left in hospitals.
Oh, wow.
And there's like 22,000 infants left in hospitals every single year. And the oldest case we helped was an 11-month-old. And so that is where they are not able to reach out to certain agencies, but they'll let us do that. So that's when we'll contact a foster to adopt agency and help work with the state to get that child bonding and connecting with a parent immediately. And we advocate very hard to work with hospitals to get those infants out. Again, oldest case we worked with was an 11-month-old that had just been sitting in an American hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not okay.
No.
People don't realize that. And then the other area we fell into was the sex trafficking side of ages 3 and under and the market for organs or sex and what's happening there. And unfortunately, the way the laws are set up, a young child can't really testify to the crime that has occurred with them. And so it's a harder thing. So the best way to go about that is to contact the Hope Box. Sometimes we get a tip and we're able to get to the proper authorities to look further into that case and protect that child.
The Hope Box was started when?
The Hope Box started in 2015. Actually, before it started, the Lord gave me the idea back in Colorado, and I laughed at him. And I literally remember saying no. And then when we moved here, lived here for about two years, and then through a series of the Lord just opening door after door and moving faster than me, that's kind of when it started. And before it launched, there's a college here called KSU. And they're a medical college and do a lot of that type of stuff, human services. And we were able to get in contact with them and met with them, gosh, 3 to 4 times, and went over the whole blueprint of the Hope Box. And these are people that wrote medical laws, that are in human resources, that really know their stuff because, they're professors and experts within their area. So we went over the whole blueprint and they gave us the go-ahead, and we were actually not going to launch till 2016, and our web guy hit public.
Oh, no.
Surprise!
So we launched in 2015 as a result of that, and we just took off real fast. Have grown to it. We've been around, gosh, going on 6 years now, 7 years, and it's just been something that has been such an answer to such a problem throughout the country.
So then what was the vision of the Hope Box when it first started?
The vision of the Hope Box when it first started was actually to bring baby boxes into like 24-hour fire stations, hospitals, locations where a mother could put a baby in a box and leave it there. And actually, that's a very old idea. Most people are unaware how young America is. We're a super young country, and throughout the rest of the world, they have boxes everywhere. It was started by the nuns years ago in Europe, and it's all over the place. And so it's not anything new, but it's just new to us. And what people don't realize, in other countries, people do abandon their children on a regular basis due to the climate and what they live in. And so in America, though, we found that the safe haven law was put into place in 2005 throughout. And the safe haven law is where mother can relinquish her infant, no questions asked. But the law does vary in every single state, and many other countries have safe haven laws for mothers. Again, I would say it varies, so you want to look up your area. Yeah. And the box is just another answer. And when we were preparing for that, we fell into these other issues. For instance, our safe haven law in Georgia was not up to date. The mother used to have to leave her information. She could go to just a hospital. She only had 3 days. We were able to amend it within one session, which is unheard of. We decided it needed amended, and we added 30 days. She's not required to leave her information, and she can go to any fire, police, or hospital. And so we changed that, and then we fell into infants left at hospitals, started getting calls about that, and then we started getting tips off about the infants and sex trafficking, and we've been able to rescue two of them from being trafficked before they were sold.
Wow.
And so that is something, it was just, we saw a problem, started to address it, and realized we had to go about it a little bit different than the original vision. And now we would love to see boxes happen. We actually have, we have a legislative within our capital that's working very hard right now to help us get the correct box language so that we can bring that to Georgia.
I mean, you originally went into this with one specific vision. Things have kind of changed and adapted over the years. And I mean, even talking about the trafficking and organ trafficking and that, did you realize that stuff like that was going on?
Oh, no. I was mortified the first time a mom contacted me and said, "Hey, my pimps tell me I can get a good price for my baby." I was like, "Say that again?
Yeah,
wow.
you get a good price for your baby?" And I understood. So there's about four to five pimps or madams to one girl. So she's always watched. And many of the times, these girls in trafficking, they're not even getting medical care. They're getting no support. There's no medical care. It's, you know, they're pregnant, and where they used to have them have abortions, now they find that if a baby's born full term, they have a second, I don't hate saying it like this, but a second product.
Huh.
So no longer do they need to do the abortion. They want that baby full term because you want those organs fully developed. If you're going to go that way, you know, you want those cells. It unfortunately goes into many other areas.
I had no
that
idea.
Can get dark really quick.
Yeah.
And then there's the other side of trafficking, and that is something where you're seeing it in a lot more news articles, like a boyfriend or somebody, you know, raped a 3-month-old or an 18-month-old, or, you know, he's getting sexual charges for that. And it's unfortunate to learn that that is something that some people actually struggle with.
No.
and that is an issue, and it breaks my heart. And honestly, it's kind of the perfect crime because, again, this child cannot really verbalize. I'll give you an example. And that we had a case of a guy that raped an 11-month-old and threw him out of a window, baby boy, and he lived.
Hmm.
And the blood was found on this infant, and the guy never got in trouble because the way the laws are set up, it doesn't actually protect our children.
Yeah.
And so that's some stuff that I really want to address throughout the, you know, the entire country. Like, we need to create laws now, knowing what's happening, that do protect our most innocent, our voiceless. And unfortunate, there's been some narratives, well, you know, they're just infants, or it's not. No, it's somebody that one day could be my senator, somebody one day that could be my doctor, and we need to take care of what is the most valuable, which I believe are children.
One thing that I mean, even in this conversation, you are a person who loves to bring hope. We talk protection, empowerment, call to hope. The story of you. Why did you decide to write the book? What was the heart behind that?
A lot of people that did not have an opportunity to get to know me on a bigger scale. And honestly, I fought it a little bit.
It seems to be a theme in your life sometimes.
Have you heard of Jonah? Didn't work out so well.
I'm doing what comes natural to me, you know. I'm doing something that people would, all the time tell me, wow, what you do is so heavy, so exhausting. But to me, it's like breathing, because it's what I'm meant to do. So it energizes me because it's what I'm passionate about. So when you find your passion, it's just easy. And so I never really thought that my testimony was a big deal. And then my board came around to me and they said, listen, you have so much power in your story. We need you to share it. And I was like, but why? Why would people want to know me? and so my board really encouraged me. And as I began to write it, it was also, I found, very healing, because you get to see this remnant of everything in my life that was that had happened from birth to now, creating me really to do what I'm called to do, which is to mother the nation and to advocate for these children. And it's just such a natural thing. And it was just interesting for me to just see the patterns and the footprints. And I want to encourage others. I talk to moms all the time that say, I'm just a mom. And I'm like, you don't understand. If you're a mom, you can handle anything. I just want to empower people to do what they're called to do, because it could make a difference in the lives of entire countries and the way that we deal with things, and not feeling like, well, I don't have the time, or I'm not educated enough, or who would want to, I don't know how to do this. And really, you just take it a day at a time. And I just loved reading the story myself. My husband, every time he read it, he cried. And I love calling it a little book with a lot of power.
This is the Why Me Project podcast, where we like to, in the hills and valleys of life, ask that question where we're going and we're looking at God and we're saying, why me? Why am I put into this situation? Why am I having to deal with this? Has that thought ever crossed your mind?
Oh, all the time. I will often look at God and ask him, are you sure you have the right person? Are you sure? As you read Called to Hope, you're going to see that a remnant of me, just the story with me in the courthouse, and believing what God said and feeling like it was going to be impossible, and really having that Esther moment and opening those doors and saying, I need a lawyer and I need one right now, and getting that lawyer within 2 minutes. As you read this book, you're going to see almost a heart of Esther. You're going to see somebody that says, when man says it's impossible, it's God said it was possible, and I'm going to believe that. And trust me, it is the most scariest, vulnerable place to be, to believe in what you're supposed to do when no one else does believe in it, and to stand in that place. But I will tell you this, every single time you walk out who you are and your identity, you will not only grow, but you will become more adept for the bigger thing that you're supposed to do. And you'll grow into that calling, which is so important for everybody else's life around you, because it helps others to step in and out of their comfort zone.
Called to Hope is available now. Again, thehopebox.org. You can jump on all the socials, Facebook, at The Hope Box, or at thehopebox.org. Sarah, we appreciate you taking some time, sharing your heart, and wanting to just empower everyone. And we hope we get to do this sometime soon.
Yes, thank you for having me.
I appreciate so much of Sarah's story and the hope and the Hope Box. And she just brings hope to so many.
I love how, in her story, this wasn't the end results that she thought was going to happen. It was her just step by step faithfully following God's prompting in her life.
There is a way for you to help. We would encourage you to find out more about the Hope Box, find out more about Sarah and what she is doing. And you can also download our podcast. Continue to tell friends and family, complete strangers, Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
And of course, faithstrongtoday.com.